Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Yeah, then another topic I've been asked to speak on is about Tribhuvanath Prabhu, who you've probably never heard of. And probably if there's not some endeavor made to remember him, then he won't be remembered. Although he's worth remembering, which is why particularly one devotee has asked me to speak about him as the 60th anniversary of his appearing in this world is coming up soon. He passed away several years ago. He was a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. I've been asked to speak about him because I do from time to time speak about him. Even though I didn't have so much association with him. Because when I joined the temple in London in 1975, he had already gone to India to serve there. So I didn't have so much association with him. But whatever I did was very valuable. The devotees who had association with him understand that he's a very special devotee. Maybe not that many devotees are talking about him now because he was in the temples in the early days, and many of the older devotees have passed away, either literally or they've left their body or they've passed out of the, or they're not seen much around the temples or the official institution or that is ISKCON today. So that's maybe one reason he's not heard about so much. He was in England in the temple in Bury Place in London. And then when he went to India, he was mostly traveling away from the temples. And then he went to preach in the Middle East where there were no temples, in countries like Egypt, Lebanon, United Arab Emirates, and places like that where there, even today there are no temples. And Lebanon, yeah, it's a pretty dangerous place to preach. He was, at one time he spent a few weeks in a prison there, prison cell, not an official prison, it's one of the groups and from time with crowded with several other people, and from time to time some of the people would get called out and they wouldn't come back, and you don't know if they'd been shot or they'd been released or whatever. So at any time they just could be called out and shot. So this kind of thing was going on. Devotees were distributing Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita in Arabic and in Lebanon, and one time in one village some local men came and had them dig some pits, means their own graves, and lined them up, pointed the guns at them, and then the local mullah told them, okay, let them go, but don't distribute those books anymore. Next time, you're going in those holes. So that was the kind, you can imagine distributing Prabhupada's books in Lebanon and other Arabic countries. It's dangerous, but that's the kind of thing he liked to do. And then he vanished for some time. Means he was just, devotees had no idea what happened. Mostly they didn't, he was out of contact anyway with devotees because he was traveling in those countries. And in those days there was no email and all these things. So he wasn't much in contact. And then he was just unheard of for some time. So devotees didn't know if he died or whatever. But apparently, yeah, well, he did. He married some non-devotee. And after some time he thought, well, I've had enough of this. And he told me, I never had any disagreement with my wife. She was a nice woman, but I thought it's time for me to get back to serving Prabhupada's mission. So he just turned up in England, and then in England and Ireland he was doing mostly festivals. And he took his festival party out to Africa. So he mostly wasn't in the temples either. So mostly who remembers him nowadays are who's left over from his festival crew. Who remember him very well. And although he wasn't an official ISKCON guru, he wasn't initiating, and he wasn't an official anything, he was a very unofficial kind of person. There are several devotees who keep his photo on their altar, because he was actually guru to them. In the festival party, he lived with the devotee, he was with them, guiding them at every moment, and again in a very unofficial way. And the reason that those who loved him, one reason was he was very unofficial, informal. Even though he was much senior, he didn't act senior. He could have had a comfortable position and being looked up to by others. I remember meeting him in the center the building he'd rented in Dublin. It was a bit of a dump, but he just couldn't afford the prices were just so high. They couldn't afford anything more than that. So it was a dump. It was like a dungeon. But he was happily living there and preaching with the other devotees and just keeping Krishna conscious just to the basics. Not all this, you know, very high level of sophistication, just like it was in the early days. Go out on Harinam, preach Krishna consciousness very straightforwardly to everyone you meet. Give them prasadam. He's very much in that mood. Later our movement did become more sophisticated. That was inevitable. It's not necessarily a bad thing. Just like we got the manna there, Bhaktivedanta manna. And it is a building which was built by people who wanted to live a sophisticated lifestyle, and it just speaks of sophistication. And Srila Prabhupada, as the aristocratic acharya of the whole world, would, in that sophisticated situation, invite sophisticated people of the world to come, and he would preach to them Krishna consciousness. So sophistication is not in and of itself a bad thing, but it just wasn't, but it can tend to morph into some kind of superficiality, and that wasn't Tribhuvanath at all. He was not at all superficial. He was very down to earth, and he always maintained that early days mood of innocence, keeping things very simple. He was very simple in his outlook, not at all stupid. By simple, we don't mean stupid. He was very intelligent. He wasn't educated in the formal sense. He joined, I believe, when he was 16. I heard he came to the temple. He was from Dublin. He came to the temple at Berry Place. Must have been 1969, just when it was opening. And they didn't let him stay because they thought he was too young or whatever. So he just slept on the porch outside And even in the height of summer in England, it's going to be cold at night outside. And when they saw him the next morning, they just let him in and he stayed. And he was fully into it from day one. Fully into serving, going out on Harinam. That was the program in the early days of the movement. The devotees would have a full morning program, then have breakfast prasadam, and at a very place which is at one end of Oxford Street, which is the center of London, not geographically, but in terms of all that London is. It's the center of the West End. So it's about a mile and a half long, every day of the year, packed with people from all over the world. In fact, nowadays it's difficult to find anyone English there at all. So the program was, it's actually on New Oxford Street, so it's a little bit off Oxford Street, but you come out of the temple, off Berry Place, and then turn into New Oxford Street. You go a little distance, cross at the crossing with Tottenham Court Road and Charing Cross Road, then you'd be in Oxford Street. So the daily program was they'd come out after breakfast, gather everyone up, and then get out on Harinam. So they go all up one side of Oxford Street, right to the end of it, to Marble Arch, for those of you who know the layout of glorious London, and then cross over the road and come back down the other side. And that would be time for lunch, if you don't get arrested. Which was always a possibility for the crime of chanting Hare Krishna. So come back for lunch, and then go on Harinam again. And come back again, take a shower, and it's time for the evening program. That was every day. And distributing back to Godheads and small books and invitation cards to the temple. And 6 days a week they'd do that, and then on Sunday they'd have the Sunday feast. Like that. So it's a very simple program. A lot of Harinam. So Tribhuvanath, he kept that spirit, and he did a lot of festivals, which in Ireland, in England, in Africa, when he came back from all this, came back from being away. So all this is well known. I'm just telling you because you don't know. But those who know him, they know this very well. And they know, most of them who know him nowadays, who are active in the movement, are still going on with the festival program. Because as he was passing away from this world, he told the devotees to continue, which they couldn't imagine doing without him, because he was the life and soul, but they have done so very admirably on his order. So, yeah, he was loved because he completely gave himself without any pretentiousness to Srila Prabhupada, to the public who he wanted to communicate Krishna consciousness with, and to everyone he came in contact with. He wasn't much concerned, as I say, with formalities. If you really want to get memories of him, because I don't have that many, I didn't meet him that many times. I heard a lot about him when I joined in England from the devotees who had joined before me. But if you really want to get a lot of memories about him, there were two devotees who, especially Vishnu Dutt from Israel. I haven't seen or heard of him for years. He was with him in India, and it was just those two were traveling all over North India, especially came to Gujarat a lot. And Padmapani, I believe, joined him in India, and then those three were together. Padmapani's from Canada. So they were just living together very close in the Middle East. And Mahakratu was also there, I believe, in the Middle East with him. And all the early days devotees, Rancho, Paras. Oh, there are so many early days devotees who joined in England. They would know much better. Balabhadra, he was another down-to-earth character. So you could ask all of them better than me. I remember the first time I met him was outside our temple in Lajpat Nagar. It was a temple, it was a small rented house, Lajpat Nagar in Delhi. And then fairly shortly after that he moved to a better house. I can't remember now. They were there for years, and then they went to east of Kailash. But that temple was there at Lajpat Nagar. So he, at that time, he was traveling, collecting for ISKCON Vrindavan with Vishnu Dutt. He was very quiet. Tribhuvanath was a very lively, bubbly kind of person. Talked a lot. Always Krishna conscious. So he was saying that I'm doing this as a duty, collecting, but I'm just. Most of the devotees there are just eating and sleeping, but still. This was after. But yeah. Might have been because I came to India. No, it was just before Prabhupada passed away. Yeah, that was August and September 1977. So he asked me if I wanted to join him, and I did, but I felt I was obliged to be with ISKCON Delhi, because due to health problems, they had one devotee who was collecting them had helped to pay my fare, because due to health problems I wasn't able to collect my full fare to go from England to India, which is why I went to India, because of the cold there, even though it was the summer. My body wasn't functioning properly. So I felt I was obliged. Really, my life would have been very different if I'd have joined him. Then shortly after that, actually, he was discouraged, because when he went back to Vrindavan, he saw a lot of devotees were just doing a lot of sleeping. That was also because devotees used to get sick a lot. So shortly after that, he went to the Middle East, and definitely my life would have been very different if I'd have been with him. But anyway, Krishna had his plans. For him and for me, and for all of us. So, one thing he said stuck in my mind. He said he was traveling Gujarat, collecting, making life members. And he said that they never saw any women. This was Gujarat in the 1970s, in the rural areas. That you see that they wouldn't come out on the street. And if you go in a house, they just vanish. They'd have their own, they'd go inside, they'd just be gone. And they might come out to bring some, a young girl might come out to bring some water, and then they'd go again. You wouldn't see them at all. That was Saurashtra. He was traveling mostly. So people were very traditional. Well, times have changed. Still in Saurashtra, they're more traditional, isn't it? It's not like Vala Vidyanagar. And that kind of behavior wouldn't be mixing of boys and girls. I think still in Saurashtra, it wouldn't be allowed, especially in the villages. Everything will... Last time I was in Jamnagar, I saw a few jeans on the girls. So, all degradation will come gradually. The demons are determined to make us, everyone into a demon. So, at that time he said that. I was quite impressed. I remember that. So, yeah, I remember also that I was trying to get him to take some prasadam, and say it was Ekadashi, and say, "Oh, I'll take later," and then he didn't want to reveal it, but eventually, because I was insisting to him, he said, "Well, actually, I'm fasting today." And then I came to understand that every Ekadashi, he and Vishuddha would do full fasting with no water. He didn't tell anyone. He wasn't a Haribol, everybody. I'm fasting without water. Just wanted to let you know. It wasn't like that. You just go on with this service. It wasn't something that he had to let others know. And that was in Delhi in August. And there was no... I don't remember all the time I was there. Yeah, actually on Janmashtami night, it rained a little bit. Otherwise it wasn't raining. It was very hot. Gets hotter than Chennai. Much hotter, actually. So you can imagine. But just he'd do it, he wouldn't say anything to anyone, and like that. That was what he was like. Another thing, I don't think he told me, but I think Mahakrishu told me that he had told him. One time he was traveling in the Middle East and he ran out of money or something, and he went to in some remote place, this was in Dubai, he told me, or somewhere, one of those places, and just said, "Look, I don't have any money, could I borrow $100? And the guy just pulled out the money and gave it to him, because for just the anecdote that people just had so much money at that time, that for them to just give $100 wasn't a big thing. $100 was a lot more in those days than it is now. It's in money terms of money value. So he came back with a bang. He started his festival programs. I met him in London. Now the temple is in Soho Street. And I just mentioned something to him which... telling me he was collecting for his festival program. Then I mentioned something like I suggested he meet the Tamil president or what. I can't remember exactly. He said, "Well, no, I can't. It's better I don't meet." Because I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, actually, I'm not in good books with him." Because he'd just got a few devotees. They'd be typically the ones who couldn't fit in well with the leadership, or they were considered not very good devotees or whatever. They were the kind he would just gather them up, inspire them, and then collect some Lakshmi and he'd start the festival program. He didn't wait to get permission. He'd just do it. That's what he was like. And so the leadership didn't like him much. He was considered a disturbance. Although, you know, if you're collecting in London with millions of people and billions of pounds floating around. It really, if someone's collecting some funds, it really doesn't make that much difference. But it wasn't much appreciated that he was independent. He was very independent by nature, which wasn't appreciated. In organizations, having a very independent spirit isn't much appreciated, which means that just being humdrum and doing what you're told and not having an adventurous spirit, the spirit of getting out and doing something for Krishna is not much encouraged. It's more like, well, okay, you just do what I say. And if you do that, that's very good. But that was never Tribhuvanath. So he was just doing that. And he was never much appreciated by the management authority in Britain and Ireland, which is maybe another reason why he's not that much known. Because if someone just goes along with the authority, they might get promoted and get a big position. But the reason devotees remember Tribhuvanath is not because he had a big position, because he never did have a big position. Actually, he was temple president in Berry Place in the days before being a temple president was a prestige issue. I'm not saying that all who are town presidents do so for prestige, but there is certainly prestige attached to it. So he wasn't into that at all. So he's very independent-minded. He ruffled a few feathers there in the management, but he did what he had to do in Prabhupada's service, and he was organizing festivals, always very straightforward. He would advertise the festivals with a big picture of Krishna and Hare Krishna festival. There was none of this, you know, meditation, yoga, spirit of India, nothing like that, just very straightforward. He also told me, when I was discussing with him once, that I didn't like all this rock music, which at that time was new in ISKCON. Now it's, I guess, part of ISKCON. But he said that in all the festivals that he did, he'd never used anything except traditional instruments, except he said sometimes he would use a bass guitar to add body, if you know what we're talking about musically, it gives some body. He said sometimes he would. Otherwise it was mridangas, kartals, gongs, and what they call in English wampas, or in Bengali jaja. That's all. And he would chant Hare Krishna. He would chant on and on and on, day and night. The festival, usually when he met Tribhuvanath, he would talk like this, because he was just getting his voice back from losing it again. Because he would chant all night at these festivals. He told me that's all you can do at these festivals. You see, apart from doing our own festivals where he would do that. He would organize. You go in some town and the devotees do Harinam for a week before, and they put up posters and they hand out flyers, and then at the end they have a 1 or 2 day festival. But apart from that, they'd go to different festivals organized by various groups. And at the festival in Ireland especially, almost everyone would be drunk, especially at night. That's Ireland. Being drunk is not just normal. I mean, that's what you do when you go to a festival, especially. So there wasn't much talking philosophy, but just they'd do kirtan all night, and he would throw beer bottles at you. Not because they didn't like you, but they were drunk. And prasadam. So I know myself, traveling and meeting people in Ireland, even after so many people would appreciate the festivals. Even, they'd be drunk, but they'd be dancing in their own wild way and chanting in their own wild way. People are so much appreciated these festivals. So he was doing that. And then he went to Africa. Who would go to Africa? Who wants to go to Africa and preach? In fact, years ago when I suggested something to the GDC, which they didn't like, but later I was just warning that if they continued doing what they were doing, that it would be a huge problem for the movement. At the time they didn't like it. Well, it was a few leaders especially, but later what I warned happened. And anyway, at the time, they wanted to punish me by sending me to Africa. That was considered. No one wanted to go there. And I didn't want to go there also. Maybe I should have gone. But I thought that anyway, I'm already preaching here in India, and I know Indian languages, and Prabhupada wanted devotees to preach everywhere, but I thought he would want me to stay here, so I didn't go to Africa. But you can just get some idea. Preaching in Africa, or even going to Africa, that was considered like a punishment. But he took it. No one's preaching there. Let me go there and preach. So he was preaching there. In other words, he wasn't going to the prestige spots where you could get many people who would say, you're very good, you're very nice. But he wanted to serve. He relished taking difficulty in Prabhupada's service. And he had great faith in the holy name, giving the holy name to others. Like I say, he wasn't officially educated, but he had no qualms in preaching to anybody. He read Prabhupada's books and he preached. And he wasn't inhibited by the fact that he wasn't officially educated, or that he wasn't a very intellectual kind of person. Oh, that reminds me also, in Ireland, he told me that some devotees have been complaining that his lectures were too basic. So, well, that's what I heard. I'm just saying what I heard from Prabhupada. What's wrong with that? So he was not very happy with that. Yeah, he invited me to Africa also. And when I was visiting England once, because I'm based in India, but I visit England and the West once a year. I've been doing that for years. So once I met him, and I was talking to him. He's telling me about preaching in Africa. He's very happy that people, they love our festivals, they all chant. And he invited me to come. And I was very much wanting to go to get his association, to spend time with him. But I didn't, because there are so many things to do. I didn't want to expand the places I was going to more. So I thought that would be very good. And another thing was, it was when he went to Africa, was inconvenient for me. I could have... We didn't know he was going to leave so early. One time he was... I believe, in Heathrow Airport, and he just fell down. He collapsed. He just collapsed due to some sickness. He would push himself and push and push and push. You'd see him at night chanting his rounds regularly, because he'd chant his rounds in the morning, and then he'd do some sessions, and all night, 11 o'clock at night, he'd be up chanting his rounds. Next morning he'd be up, and he'd just push and push and push himself. And around the age, I guess, of around 50, he was still quite young. He's just one time, he was on the escalator, I believe, in Heathrow Airport, and he just collapsed. And he fell down and smashed his head, and then shortly after that, he passed away. So that was his attitude, just push, push, push. We have to do service. He didn't like to waste any time. He just used all his time. He didn't care for his health. And that was his whole attitude. Yeah, he was telling about Africa. He said, yeah, Ireland's a bit of a small place for me. I need a bigger field. Because Ireland, the whole population, both north and south, it's only about 4 million, something like that. One thing I remember, in that cellar in Dublin, which was their center, he showed me a magazine, two photos of one of the most photographed women of the 20th century. Because she was very, very beautiful. Her name was and is, I didn't hear she died yet, Brigitte Bardot, a French film star. Very beautiful woman. So you may ask, well, why is he showing me a photo of a beautiful woman? So there's a photo of her face. Very beautiful. But that was her about 30 years before, and it showed a photo of her today, which was then, which was 15 years ago. And the same face, you could, but completely covered with wrinkles. So it was instructional. The very beautiful face, the same face, some years later, had become, what was so attractive had become very ugly. So I just remembered, he showed me. It was from some Kami magazine. So there's a few memories of Tribhuvanath Prabhu. So now you heard about it. Now you've become purified. Now I've become purified by remembering him. You can also try to be like him. There are different devotees serving Krishna in different ways. He did so in a very down-to-earth, straightforward way. Others are doing so in a, they may do so in a very sophisticated way, meeting the big people of this world and engaging them in Krishna's service. So, there are many different devotees, but he was unique. And we should remember also, as we meet the sophisticated people of this world, that quality of having just complete faith in, dedication to, service to the Holy Name, complete faith in Srila Prabhupada, without questioning this way or that way. One thing Rancho Prabhu told me was that Prabhupada, you could understand that Prabhupada, just the way he dealt with Tribhuvanath, had great feeling for and faith in him, just as Tribhuvanath had great faith in Prabhupada and feeling for Prabhupada. And Rancho Prabhu told me once that Tribhuvanath was leading kirtan. His kirtan, you can still see on YouTube or whatever, his kirtan. All his kirtans, he would start fast and continue fast all the way through. It was like very lively kirtans. And a very, like that, you could say, unsophisticated way of singing. You wouldn't say his voice was very sweet, and his style of singing was very musical. It wasn't off-tune or anything, but in his raucous voice, it means a little sounding rough. So Rancho told me one time he was leading Kirtan, Tribhuvna, and Prabhupada was there, and they were just looking at each other. And it was like they were both on the same platform of just seeing everything in this world as completely useless. And Naam Bina Kichuna Hikuva Choda Bhuvana Maja. There's nothing but the Holy Name. They both related on that platform. So there's a few memories. Like I said, I didn't have much personal association with Tripurana Prabhu. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
All glories to Srila Prabhupada, all glories to Tripurvanath Prabhu. Anything any of you would like to say? Questions, comments? No? Alright. Hare Krishna. Not much philosophy today, but philosophy in action. The devotees. He was a great devotee. You don't hear much about you. In India, practically, you wouldn't hear about him at all. There may be so many... Actually, there are not going to be many devotees like Chibhuvna. He was very special, there's no doubt. But what I was going to say is that there may be... Apart from those who are well-known, and, you know, like sannyasis, they're well-known, and they have samadhis made, that's the etiquette, their bodies are not burned, samadhi is made for sannyasis. So sannyasis are well-known, and they're considered to be advanced, and we hope they are advanced. There may be many other devotees who are very advanced also. Recently, one of my disciples passed away, Rishabhanu Tanaya in Russia. And the devotees who knew her, they knew that she was very special. What was special about her? Well, she joined during the Soviet time, which was dangerous to be a devotee at those times. And in many ways, she wasn't very special. She wasn't a big preacher. She was a housewife. Her husband wasn't Krishna conscious. Her daughter chanted 16 rounds a day, but she's still attached to Mayavadi ideas, Russian version of Mayavad. It's there also. It's not only in India. It's everywhere. In India, it used to be a bit more sophisticated. Still, it's more sophisticated. Not much. No, actually, nowadays. Little bit more sophisticated. But there was something special about her also, as all the devotees knew. Her dedication, her faith in Krishna, the holy name, her simplicity. She was a real role model for the younger women joining and being housewives. Very simple, very fixed in Krishna consciousness. So there may be many great devotees. She thought of me as her shelter and her guide. But I can say I'm very fortunate by the grace of Srila Prabhupada to have a disciple of that caliber. It's my good fortune. So, try to be good devotees. You don't have to have someone saying Jai Om Vishnu Pad to you to be dear to Krishna. Every one of you are dear to Krishna. Everyone's dear to Krishna. And especially you're all dear to Krishna because you're all chanting Hare Krishna. Because you're all attached to Prabhupada. That's also a special advantage. Try to make your follow in the footsteps of great devotees. More known and lesser known. And make your life successful in Krishna consciousness. You can do so in any status of life. Here in India, the women still didn't get their full liberation, like in the West, where, you know, 12 years old, they can already had 20 boyfriends. And it's considered normal. At the age of 15, they could already had a few abortions. Well, that may be in India also. It's coming more and more, unfortunately. But generally, among devotees especially, we try to encourage traditional social roles. So don't think that you're going to be anything, that you're not going to be recognized as a big leader. Don't think that you have any less opportunity to be Krishna conscious. You can be a great devotee. If you love Krishna, Krishna loves you. That is the complete perfection. This name, fame and glory, according to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Tava Pratishta Shukare Bhishta. If you want name, fame and glory in the name of Krishna consciousness, you might as well go and find a pig. Take its stool and rub it all over your body. Better than desiring name, fame and glory. So, Hare Krishna. Had to have little hogs, dogs, camels and asses in there. Otherwise it wouldn't have been a bona fide lecture. So, save the best till last. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. All glories to all the assembled devotees. All glories to Tribhuvanath Prabhu.